Hello, boys and girls, and welcome to BoagWorld.com.
The mums and dads as well, surely.
No, I mean boys and girls. Well, everybody's a boy or a girl, even if they're a mum and dad. So you just interrupt me straight off. I do something slightly different, and you just ruin it. Hello and welcome to BoagWorld.com, the podcast for all those involved in designing, developing, and running websites on a daily basis. My name's Paul Boag, and with me is Miserable Shit. What? My new name for you, because you just ruin everything.
But that suggests I'm not miserable.
No, you're not, actually. You're
That's
annoying.
A really poor choice of name.
All right. Pedantic arse.
Now that I can go with.
So how are you today, Marcus? I don't feel like I've seen you for ages.
I'm feeling quite insulted currently.
You're not, you liar.
I'm all right. I've been tearing my office apart for the last
couple
of days.
How did your cleaning go?
It's kind of nearly clean.
Right.
But I'm still working my way through two filing cabinets. I'm not yet to the point when I've opened a paint pot.
Oh, right.
It's mental. I've decided I'm going to have to throw the carpet away as well.
What have you done to the carpet?
It's just worn to threads.
Right.
When the chair moves up and down.
That's why I have laminate floor in my office.
Yeah.
Because it does do quite well, that does.
Yeah. Mm. Anyway, I've been busy doing other stuff.
Busy, busy, busy. I've been busy too.
Yeah.
I've launched the new Boag World website.
Yeah, I was looking at that.
It's live and spangly.
Yeah.
That's a technical term.
I saw Dan playing with it.
See, Dan, we're going to come on to this later, because I've launched it without there being responsive design on it.
That's what I was just going to test. No. Oh, alert, it didn't work.
No, it's been turned off intentionally.
Because and it I'm going to make up
some,
wrong,
I'm going to make up some bollocks in the show about why that is.
Oh, okay. Do I have to kind of raise a flag at that point?
I'm sure you will. But no, Dan is doing some work on it right now.
Mm.
So, and he's going to write us a little post about his experiences, which I think is mainly going to be slagging off the way I built the site. But that's cool. I don't mind that.
Okay.
I like Dan. He's so happy.
He is.
I like happy people.
He is. Very positive.
Yeah. He's not pedantic.
I'm very positive and pedantic.
They're not mutually exclusive.
No, absolutely not. No, I'm very, very busy with work as well, and I've just come back to work this morning and just got that kind of like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I really horrible. Don't. It's like, I don't know where to start. Because last Friday I was desperately trying to, you know, get things done. And I managed to do it all and had this wonderful feeling of well-being. Like,
yeah.
I've ticked all the boxes, yeah. And then I've been off since last Friday, and now I've got no idea who I am or what I'm doing.
You should have been at my WDC talk on
last
Friday.
Oh, how did that go?
Well, very well, yeah, it was fine. It was a good conference, really nice bunch of people, and I liked it. I did call it a budget conference when I was on the stage, which might not have been a very good idea, but it's cheap, it's good value for money.
Cheap as well.
Well, it's 50 quid or 50-something quid, which for a conference is amazing. But what's good about it is it then opens it up to all these other people that wouldn't normally be able to afford to come to conferences, like, for example, freelancers that are just starting out,
mm-hmm.
or students. And there were loads of that kind of audience and everything. I was talking about, you know, living as a freelancer or living as an entrepreneur and running your own business and all the rest of it, and the stresses and strains that go alongside that. So part of what I was talking about was being organised and productivity and not worrying about all that you've got to do and that kind of stuff, which is why you should have been there.
Don't open your email, that kind of thing.
Yes.
Which doesn't apply if you're a salesperson, but there you go.
It does. I think it could work for you. I accept that it's harder, but I think it could work for you.
Mm.
But to be honest, I mean, a big part of your job is sending emails anyway. So you're gonna even if you're not checking email the whole time, you're gonna be sending it out. So you might as well be checking it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I kind of accept that. Someday somebody ought to invent an email client that will send out but not receive in. I mean, I know you can set that up to do that, but normally most email clients, if you send something out, automatically checks and brings email in at the same time. And you need to be able to stop that.
Yeah, but. No, because you're having conversations with people via email, so therefore you're expecting a response. And
yeah, but email's not the right place to have immediate response. Anyway, let's not have this conversation, because You and me could be, as far as organisation ways of working, could not be more diametrically opposed, could we, really?
No.
The fact that it's taken you how long to clean up your office just to get to the point of maybe one day being able to paint it is an indication of this difference.
Well, I haven't been that... It hasn't been decorated for 10 years, near as damn it. So
that in itself is an indication.
Yeah, but this is a small room full of enormous amounts of clutter. So
clutter. That's my point.
All right, stuff.
I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying we're different, Marcus. Mm. And anyway, why are we discussing this on the podcast? Does anybody care?
Yeah, they do. They like it when I'm pedantic.
Yes, they do. Unfortunately, otherwise I would have sacked you a long time ago. Oh, that's so hysterical. Yes. It's making that site live. It's quite stressful making a site live, which is what we're talking about today.
That's what we do as a company, Paul, so it shouldn't be that stressful, should it?
It is for me. I don't do it. When was the last time I made a site live? I can't remember.
I don't know.
That would have been in the very early days of Headscape when I did that, before we got a techie in, I suspect.
I don't actually make sites live, but I'm involved in the process of it.
Yeah, but it's that last... Well, that's what we're talking about today, which is actually a brilliant segue. Come on, I almost sound like a professional radio presenter. Except not. It's that kind of... The bit that we're going to talk about today is the kind of, when do you launch? When is a website finished?
Mm.
That was a big problem I had with Boag World. It's like... Do I go live now, or do I? Well, just tweak this, or just change that, and you know,
you've got a load of existing content as well. So yeah, I mean, if it's a brand new site, it's kind of, you've probably set up from a content point of view. Right, this is enough.
Yeah, but it's not just the content that's the problem. It's like things like the responsive design wasn't done. So should I have launched the website? Should I wait until that?
Do I need
done?
To put my alert up at this point?
I don't know. Possibly. You know, and also I know, for example, there are elements of the typography that aren't right.
Really?
Yeah, there are loads of little things that probably you wouldn't notice. But, well, I mean, let's get into the show.
Yeah.
So anyway.
All right.
So we're looking at when to launch a website and how do you launch the website without problems, okay? So this is actually, believe it or not, is the last in our series. Last one in this series.
Number 11, that feels like a really, series length.
A really... No, it doesn't. 12 is a series length.
Well, either, sometimes it's 5.
No,
or,
TV. Yeah. TV, it's either 6, 12, 22 or 24.
Or 3.
When is it 3?
Sherlock Holmes, BBC. Best thing on TV ever.
It was pretty good, actually, I have to say.
They showed repeats of them back a month or so ago.
Oh,
new series coming out. They finished it by saying, and the new series will be out next year. So I threw something at the telly.
Really? Not out until next year?
Next year.
But they've been already advertising it.
Bastards. Anyway, so therefore...
Still not as bad as American TV, where it wouldn't have made a second season, because they would have broadcast it at 3 a.m. Yeah. Disappointed with the ratings, so taking it off, like Firefly, not bitter. Oh, like Caprica, not bitter. Like V, not bitter. So the list goes on.
Which is the one I like that they didn't do? None of those. I started watching Caprica and thought...
Yeah, Caprica improved. What? They don't, that's it, they don't give...
Flash forward.
Yes.
That was good.
Yes.
Ish.
Got cancelled. They don't give series enough time to really find their feet and get going. This is yet another tangent.
It's the last show, let's just go, woo, you know.
So anyway, 11 episodes in this season, who knew? Yeah. But we will be coming back, obviously. We've got a new season, and I'll tell you a bit more about that at the end of the show.
Cool.
So we've done 10 posts so far, advanced maths there, or 10 shows, should I say, where we've looked at every aspect of the web design process. And so now we come to the moment of truth, which is making the site live. Unfortunately, when it came to Boag World, I have one tricky question to answer, which is the one that I've already mentioned, which is, when is the site done? Have I finished
it
yet?
It never is it?
Well, no, I don't think it is. And I think this is one of the hardest questions to answer in web design. You know, when do you make a site go live? And I think it's hard to answer for several reasons. First, your website's never going to be perfect. You know, no matter how hard you try, there will always be things that can be improved. Whether it's minor tweaks to typography or rewriting previous content, there's always something that's going to be changed.
Well, how often do you rewrite previous content?
Well, what I've had to do with Boag Ward is cast on it, actually, because I'm a lazy arse and get other people. You noticing the trend here? There's Dan doing the responsive design, Kath checking all the content.
Delegation, Paul. It's very important.
I'm good management skills. And Lee's been doing some stuff. What's Lee been doing? Oh, the forum. Yes. Right. So overall, I'm doing very little. but no, with content, when Kath was going through it, there was a lot of stuff. She was going through it really to look to see, you know, does the design break on any of these pages?
Oh, I see, right, yeah.
But there were also a lot of things where links were, you know, broken or videos weren't working or whatever else, and all that needed to be pruned and sorted out.
Makes sense.
She did amazingly efficiently, if at the last minute, as is my wife's want. She'll never listen to this.
No, guarantee.
And nobody will tweet it.
Good point.
I just won't say her Twitter ID. So
it wouldn't take a lot to work it out, would it?
No, it wouldn't really. I love it. So there's always going to be stuff that's been improved. That's what we were talking about. And also, I think the problem is further exasperated by the phenomenal speed at which things change online. When you start a project, you may be implementing best practice. However, by the time the site comes to launch, that best practice may already have changed and your site will be left behind. It feels like there's constantly moving goalposts, and so you're always going to feel slightly dissatisfied with your site, or that somehow you're not ready to launch. I mean, a great example of that was EDF, where when we started that project, things like responsive and adaptive design didn't exist. But by the time we got nearing launch, suddenly people were beginning to talk about it, and so we kind of crowbarred it in at the end, even though it wasn't really part of the scope, just because we wanted to do it. And there's always something like that, and you're always going, oh, well, perhaps if I hold off for a bit longer, you know, I can do this, that, and the other.
It's like the new iPhone, isn't it?
Yeah, wait for the next
one. iPad 3, that's the next thing, isn't it?
Yes, yeah, absolutely. iPad, yes. I'm already saving up for that. I want it because it's going to have a written display. At least it should do, I hope, maybe.
You don't know.
I don't know. Anyway, I'm reading Steve Jobs' biography. There's a tangent of a tangent.
He wasn't a particularly nice person, was he,
let's
be honest?
No, really.
It
makes good biography as a result.
Yeah.
And he was a complex person. I don't think he was not. It's not that he wasn't nice. He wasn't nasty. He was just a bit neurotic, really, I think.
Yeah.
It's good. It's good. It's good biography. Worth reading. Anyway, so the other factor that leads to dissatisfaction and desire to put off launch is the amount of time we spend poring over projects. We all know what it feels like. If you've been working on something for a long period of time, we naturally become dissatisfied with the result. If we've been working on a project too long and only see the problem, you know, we end up only seeing the problems that we're losing.
And get bored with it.
And it doesn't have that impact to you anymore. So all of these factors make me, and I think everybody else, naturally hesitant to commit ourselves to going live. However, I think it's important to remember two things. First, until you put the website in front of real users, it's impossible really to know whether it's ready or not. It's the long and the short of it. You could do usability testing all that you want, but there's nothing quite like putting it in front of other people to really get a sense, you know,
many people
to get a sense of whether it's working or not. The second thing is that, and I think this is a really important one, especially if you come from a marketeer background and you're used to doing a lot of, you know, brochures and that kind of stuff. The web is not print, right? You don't send it to the printer and then that's it. It can never be changed ever again. You can make a website live and then you can tweak and change it as much as you want once it's live. And I was having exactly this conversation this morning with Pete about one of our clients. We built the website and they're starting to go, oh, yeah, but could we just improve it by doing this, that, and the other? No, make it live and then let's look at it afterwards. It's really fear, It's really strange that we have this fear of launching our websites too soon.
It's not that strange, though, is it? It's always, I think you want to make it as best as it possibly can be so that people go, ooh, when you've done it. And that's the same as if you did a bit of print or any piece of work, an essay.
Yeah, I mean, but there's...
Is it really done, you know?
Yes.
Is it as best as it can be?
Yes. But I think the thing with the... I think a lot of people, it's like, well, why does it need to be as best? best as it can be.
Human nature, I guess. That's yeah. what I'm referring to.
And I'm not saying you should budge it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying you
any
should.
Any old shit.
Yeah. I mean, come on to this. I think a big part of it, and to be honest, is that people have this kind of believe in this adage of you only get one opportunity to make a first impression. So you want to have this big wow moment when people come.
Yeah, you don't want it to break horribly for the thing you missed.
Yes, exactly. And I think we fear that new users will arrive on our site and have a terrible experience and never return again. And that's true. You know, users do that. But I think you need to ask yourself what constitutes a terrible experience. I think as long as your website is usable and accessible, the majority of users will be satisfied, right? Admittedly, they might not be blown away.
Well, if it's better than the previous version.
Ah, there we go. There we go. And that, in my opinion, is the key to the whole thing.
Right.
You know, I think when we start using this adage like, you know, you only get one chance to make a first impression, I think most of the time we're thinking about our peers when we say that, competition or other people internally, people that are going to be overly critical more than a normal user would be. Certainly, you know, I know, for example, Bergworld, there's a lot wrong with the new Bergworld site. I can see there are issues with typography, layout, browser compatibility, not to mention the lack of responsive design. Hopefully by the time this comes out, there will be responsive design. Although I know none of these issues would stop a user returning. They still worry me because I know other web designers will make judgments on this type of thing. So I'm not suggesting that we should ignore our peers' opinions or that they're unimportant. However, I don't think that should hold us back from launching. And you're right. You know, I think if you've got to ask one simple question, is the new website better than the old one? If the answer to this question is yes, then I see there's no reason to hold back from going live. So my conclusion with Bergworld, okay, it didn't have responsive design. Okay, it does have the odd issue here and there, but it's still a hell of a lot better than what was there before. So in my opinion, let's go ahead and make that live. You know, if the new website is better, it's, you know, it seems no-brainer to launch it and to get it out there. Not only will users appreciate the improved site, you can also start to generate some return on the investment that you've made to build it.
Yeah, and my problem with the old site was the search didn't work very well.
Yeah.
So.
But that's, have you tried the new one?
No, I haven't tried the new search, no.
Right, it's much better.
Cool.
I still want to tweak the search results page, but it's certainly better than the old one.
I'll have a play now.
There you go. Keep yourself entertained.
Yeah,
you as long as you don't complain about it.
Yeah.
So the earlier your website launched, the sooner you can start reaping the rewards, basically. But that's not the only benefit, I think, of launching earlier. Take, for example, the Bergworld website. Launching the new site has unsurprisingly generated considerable interest. Publicity, I guess. However, because the current site lacks responsive design, I actually... which I will, you know, will probably be implemented by the time you hear this, is actually presenting me with an opportunity. Instead of having one chance to generate interest in the website, I now have two. Once the initial...
Much better, Paul.
Is it?
Yes.
Search?
Yes.
Brill. Excellent. I just want to improve the search results design as much as I think. It's a bit of a rushed page, that one. But anyway. Yeah, so I've now got two chances when the site initially launches and then again when I implement responsive design. I think launching early and with incomplete functionality has basically enables us to get multiple marketing opportunities, multiple chances to go back to people and say, hey, check out my site. So it was, hey, check out my site, it's all new and spangly. And then it would, hey, check out the responsiveness of my site. So, you know, all good stuff.
Yes.
Finally, launching early gives us an unprecedented opportunity to gather user feedback. Although user testing is incredibly helpful during the development process, nothing beats having large numbers of real users interacting with your site. This gives you an opportunity to fix issues and avoid spending money on elements that users don't want. So, for example, I've had some ideas for the site that I haven't implemented because I want to see whether users actually are requesting them or whether they're, you know, they even want them, if that makes sense.
So I assume that feedback has all been massively complimentary.
It has, actually, but that in itself is quite an interesting thing. Because basically, yeah, I'm just trying to think how to explain this. When it comes to testing, I think you need to be a little bit hesitant. about the kind of feedback that you receive and how you address that feedback. So, for example, I think the comments you get over the first couple of weeks can be very reactionary and not kind of a good indication of how effective or otherwise the site is. You know, look at Facebook. Whenever they update, everybody moans about it and starts pages that, you know, with 10 million likes of "we hate the new Facebook design" or whatever. I think users often react negatively towards a new design because they don't like change, and it's important to allow them time to adjust before reacting to the suggestions. However, equally, I think there's a problem with positive feedback. For example,
this is the this goes back. It's similar to the Brendan Dorsgate thing.
Yes,
when all of your mates go, "Oh wow, it's fantastic!"
Yes, absolutely. But I think it goes a little bit further even than that. So sometimes people can be wowed by the new design, the impact of the new design.
Yeah, when actually it's rubbish and completely unusable.
Yeah,
I can't use it.
So I think you just need to be a little bit careful and give people time to kind of bed in before you start, you know, taking their comments and feedback too seriously.
Sure.
Anyway, I've lost my place now because you made me go out off on a complete
tangent. I think you need to talk about browser testing and quality assurance.
Do I? That's good to know. So, yes. So, you're thinking about launching your website. And, you know, let's be clear. It's got to be better than what's up there at the moment, which means that your browser testing needs to be better than what was there up there at the moment. You know, it needs to be more reliable and work across more browsers, etc. But the trouble is, everybody hates testing websites across multiple browsers, operating systems. However, it is important, and it can't be left to the last minute. And I've spent probably the last couple of weeks bug testing. Many web designers choose to do a cursory browser testing as they go along, and then leave the detailed testing until near launch. And I think that's perfectly acceptable, but that can't be used as an excuse for rushing the testing process at the end. Once the site is complete, there is a strong temptation to just launch. Nevertheless, it is prudent. It is prudent. Be sensible, people. To spend as long as possible checking the website on different browsers, operating systems and devices.
Absolutely. I mean, it's all so easy these days with us with our nice fancy Macs.
Exactly.
And looking at it in Safari 8.3 or whatever we're at now.
Yes. But then you look at it in IE7 on a PC and it looks shite.
Lots and lots and lots and lots of people still use.
Except not on Boag World.
Yeah.
So that's fine.
But IE8 they will.
Yes. And I spent a long time fighting with IE8. Mm. There's a great tool I found out about on Friday when I was at the Web Developers Conference with Dan. It was Dan, I think, that told me about it. Was it Dan or Kia? I can't remember. Anyway.
Yeah, you sent an email around. I thought, yeah, that looks good.
Browser Stack is called. And basically what it does is it's a web application that allows you to remotely connect to various virtual... what's the proper word for it? I want to say virtual systems, but that's not right. When you use something like VMware, or they call them something, virtual...
Machines?
Virtual machines, that's it, yes.
So you can set up the different operating systems on different browsers. And
They set it up and you just say, I want one. Firefox, whatever, and it connects you and you can test it, which is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Not that I've actually got to use that for Boag World because I pretty much finished and only found out about it on Friday.
Okay.
But, sounds good. So it's good practice to look at your website in as many browsers as possible. But that doesn't mean, I think it's important to say, that doesn't mean you need to spend hours fixing your site to look perfect in every single one of those browsers you look at it in. Although it's desirable to make your content accessible in as broad a range of browsers as possible, you've got to think about return on investment. If only a handful of users are accessing your site in a certain browser, then the amount of time involved in fixing the site for that browser may not be justified. So, for example, if you take the case of Boag World, and you look at what I've done on that site, IE6 and IE7, they just get a really basic style sheet, lets them navigate around, but the net amount of users is so minuscule that it wasn't worth me doing anything other. IE8 is another interesting one. So I've got, you know, 1 in 20 users use IE8 on Boag World, right? So when it came to thinking about responsiveness and the way the website looks generally, I wanted it to look as good as possible. But it wasn't responsive in IE8.
Right.
All right, it wasn't working. The scaling wasn't working for some reason. So it's like, oh, do I invest time in sorting this out? 1 in 20, that's worth, you know, it's a reasonable number of people. It really should
work. This was your tweeted faux pas. I remember this one.
Faux pas?
It was a bit of a faux pas.
Why? What did I say?
I can't remember exactly, but basically, who cares about IE8 responsive design?
Yes, and then they're really explained. Because my logic was, in my head,
it's only iPads.
It's a range of devices. I knew that, but I didn't know of any devices that ran IE8 other than desktops. But then people rightly pointed out, well, some people might be running lower resolutions and so would need the responsive design. Fair enough, I thought. Do I fix it? I don't know what to do. Then Amber, who's one of the people that I follow on Twitter, said, well, have you looked at your stats for this? Are there people actually running at a low resolution? When it looked at the last year's stats, not one user was running less than 1024x768. Mm. Now, okay, it's possible that they're not running their browser full screen. Mm-hmm. But generally, that felt like enough not to justify making the design responsive in IE8. It wasn't worth the effort and get it working. So I decided I wasn't going to bother. So that's what I mean by kind of thinking about the return on investment and thinking about what you're doing. Yes, make it accessible on all of them, but it doesn't need to have all the bells and whistles. And I think this demonstrates why analytics is so important in browser testing. Looking at your analytics can save you a lot of time fixing particular issues in different browsers. You know, then once you've looked at your analytics, it becomes a matter of weighing up the time involved in fixing a bug, the number of users who will encounter the bug, and the bug severity. And if you compare those different factors, it will make it pretty clear whether it needs fixing or not. Yep. Anyway, in many cases, it's simply a matter of even if it does need fixing, you can put that fix off until after launch. You know, it doesn't need to all be perfect, which I think I've kind of driven home that point now.
Yes, just do it.
I sound like a budget person, and I'm really not. It's about getting the most money back, getting the best, not necessarily money, but the best return in whatever form that is from your website as soon as possible. Right, let's talk about the moment of flipping the switch and making your site live. I hate that bit. I hate it with a passion. Anyway, I'm not going to talk about this in any great depth because Andy Wicks has already written an excellent pre-launch checklist our website. So if you go to the show notes for this show, which is boagwall.com/, I can't remember the URL, season/2/, what is it, S02E10?
11.
Something like that.
Yeah,
try that.
Hyphen E11, I would have thought. But
no, there's no hyphen in it. I really should know this. But it's the end of the series, so it's not worth finding out now, is it? So anyway, if you go to the show notes, you'll find it. If you just go boagwall.com/podcast, then you'll get to all the episodes and you can find this episode. Yeah. And then from there, you can find the pre-launch launch checklist. Or use the wonderful new search facility.
Yes, which is great.
So there you go.
It actually finds things, yes, which it didn't used to.
Which is always good. It's really dumb. The WordPress search, it returns results chronologically rather than in terms of relevance. How dumb is that? So I'll fix that now anyway.
So good.
I did talk about the tool I used on a couple of shows back. Can't remember what it was called now. Anyway. So, I'm not going to go in great depth because of that checklist, but what I want to do is share a couple of lessons I've learned from launching Boag World. Because I hate launching websites. Have I said that?
Once or twice, yes.
I hate it. And normally I let other people do it. But when it comes to Boag World, basically nobody would help me.
Quite right.
I tried to get other people to help me and they wouldn't. So I was on my own. Fortunately, I did at least one thing right, which was good, which is that I had my development copy of the site on the same server as the live one.
Yeah.
Right? So instead of working locally on a local copy, I worked on a version at hello.boagworld.com, which is gone now, so there's no point looking out. Having the website hosted on the same environment made my life so much easier, because when it came to going live, it was a matter of just turning off one site, turning on the other.
Yeah.
I didn't have to worry about any last-minute configuration, problems with the server or anything like that. It just worked. Not that everything went entirely smoothly. I managed to screw it up in a couple of areas. One was font deck, where I used from my typography, because I had that configured and set up for hello.boagworld.com instead of for the live site.
Mm-hmm.
And then also I had been, I use hover cards, Twitter hover cards and tweet box where you can tweet from within the website. And the API key was wrong on that. So thinking about those kinds of things is obviously fairly important. However, really, those are fairly minor issues. And they immediately went on my post-launch fix list, which have now been fixed. So that's basically it, you know. But I think it's really important to remember that when you make a website live, that's not an opportunity to sit back and congratulate oneself on a job well done. In reality, launching a website is just the beginning of the process and not the end. For a start, I've still got my list of fixes to address. I've done most of them, but I still have a few more. After that, I've got my list of ideas for improving the website. And let's face it, that second list hopefully will never get completed as I continually add more ideas to it over time as I learn more about how users interact with the site and, all the rest of it.
And study your analytics.
And all of that.
Yes.
Good stuff,
and
yeah.
Sort your segments out.
I have. I've done that.
Yeah, really?
I'm a good boy, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm not sure it's working entirely as I want it, but I've certainly done what we talked about in the last show. So, yeah, so there's all that kind of stuff. And while working on my list, I'm also going to be gathering feedback about the website, which is a crucial stage in the process. And I've already talked about, how important that is and the pros and cons of reacting on that too soon. I mean, basically, my rule of thumb, wait for a couple of weeks to identify and tackle any major issues. You know, just let the whole thing bed in before you start jumping on people's feedback. Also, another reason to wait a couple of weeks is to wait before you start publicizing your website too heavily. So, for example, it's going to be a couple of weeks before this show comes out. And that's really when I'm going to start pushing the website and say, hey, look at what I've done, da, 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 da. The reason I'm waiting is because it gives an opportunity to kind of get rid of any issues or lingering stuff. It's great temptation, isn't it, when you launch a website to tell the world about it. But my experience, that can cause problems. A better approach is to do a soft launch and wait a couple of weeks before you begin promotion. Nothing is more embarrassing than launching a high profile site and shouting to the world about it when it's still full of bugs and problems.
Yep.
So there is a little bit of advice about the process of launching your website, when to do it, how to do it, how not to look like an idiot. But that's it.
So how have you enjoyed designing your new website?
I have. I've really enjoyed it, actually. It's been a really... I needed to do it.
Mm.
Because I don't design and build stuff on a daily basis anymore... It was just really important for me to get my hands dirty, understand what's going on, see if I can still do it. And it was quite satisfying that I still can, and that I still can keep up with the latest techniques and stuff. It's not perfect. My code is not as good as Dan's, as I'm sure he'll tell you when he writes his responsive design post. But then his blogs won't be as good as mine, maybe. I don't know.
Who knows on that one?
Yeah. A brilliant writer, in which case I'll hate him. So yeah, it's gone really, really well. I think I'm going to try and, every 6 months, every year, have a little project that I build. Even if it's, I don't know, my church's website or something, just to keep my hands in and know I'm not doing Stroke the Toad's website.
No need there.
It's already perfect, isn't it?
It's all right.
Does the job, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Put him, I think there can be a lot of snobbery about these things. You know, your website is perfectly adequate.
Yeah, but it's all right. What's wrong? What's wrong with it?
It's fine.
I can read between the lines.
I can't even remember what it looks like.
It's just a WordPress site.
Is it really? There you go. That's all right. That's standard, what Boag World is.
Bog standard WordPress site with a few stories, gigs, and songs. That's it.
And a little bit pretty?
A little bit of fancy drop downery underneath our names, which Anna did.
Did Anna design it? You designed
with
it.
With me.
Yeah, you told her she... Yeah, you made her do stuff, didn't you?
It's all right.
Yeah, it does the job, doesn't it?
Exactly. See?
StrokeTheToad.com. It's not pretty, but it is worth looking at. My word. I think what's most disturbing about it is it looks like a lineup.
Fair enough.
Look like a bunch of criminals. Actually, to be fair, you look least like a criminal out of them all. Number two, the drummer, looks like a serial killer.
Well, yeah, well, he is a serial killer, actually.
And Phil Hart, number three, four in the lineup.
My best mate.
He looks like a kind of...
another
that
serial
guy?
Killer.
Who's the guy that did the great train robbery?
Oh,
Ronnie Biggs.
Ronnie Biggs.
Yeah, he looks like that kind of character. No, I'm not saying he looks like him. I'm just saying he's that kind of East End mafia kind of mobster type.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
This is not, I'm not at all fun if you haven't, you can't see it.
It's strokethetoad.com.
Gareth looks like, he looks like a petty criminal fighter. I'm thinking shoplifter, maybe, that type.
If you click on our names, you get lots of silly words come up.
A sparkly-eyed teddy bear of a man there who manages to play guitar like 10 teddy bears.
It's just lots of stupid...
Phil loves his feet, but we all love the rest of him.
Yeah. Oh.
Okay, that's just quite weird. That was Marcus's description, if you hadn't guessed. Anyway, so that's it.
We've moved off onto a... This really is a... tangent. Yeah, we're playing on December the 3rd. There you go.
That's something Christmassy. Where's you? Where you play?
At the Lion Brewery. It's all on the website.
Where's that?
It's in... Oh, is that in Hampshire or Surrey? It's on the Hampshire-Surrey right. border. Yeah. It's near Aldershot.
I can't be bothered to travel that far for you.
Good.
I would like to see you play in a gig at one point. It would be quite cool.
Yeah. It's a good night out, that one. But, yeah, if you can't be bothered, fair enough.
I might be a bit of a laugh, money. I'll have a think. Right, anyway, so that brings us to the end of this season. Mm. I hope you found it useful. I thought it was a bit different doing a case study of a website rebuild. I don't think anyone else has done that as a podcast. So
I think the only thing that I've missed from this series is us commenting on what's been happening in the world.
Yeah.
There's been no news, which I always enjoyed doing. Mm. But other than that, I think it's a good subject.
Yeah.
It was real things rather than, you know, stuff that you might want to talk about when you don't really know. But it had some application.
Exactly. Next season is going to be interesting. Have I even told you what we're doing next season?
Probably, but I've forgotten.
So we're going to kick off in April, I'm hoping. And basically, it's going to be a book this time, like the last season.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have a book accompanying it. And we're going to look at the working relationship between web designers and their clients and how the two work together. I've discovered we're a bit special at Headscape, and I'm not talking special needs special. We're unusual in the way we do things. I'm quite from going to like conferences and speaking to other web designers, we have a very different relationship with our clients than most web design agencies. We have this very kind of close collaborative relationship of pushing a lot backwards and forwards between the client, and we see producing and launching websites is a very collaborative, interactive process where they put in as much as we do, really.
Mm-hmm.
While a lot of other web design agencies just kind of go off, do their thing, and then present it.
Mm-hmm.
And Twitter and conferences is just full of people slagging off clients. And there's something, I think, quite fundamentally broken about how most people have that relationship between the client and the web designers. So that is what I want to tackle in next season and look at what our way of working with clients, basically.
Yeah, which I think isn't, and I think we've had a, even though this is something we've been kind of evolving for 10 years now.
Yeah.
And it's still not right.
No.
We've had some experiences in the last 6 months where we thought, oh, hang on, that wasn't quite the right way of approaching that.
Yeah.
So it's a good thing to talk about.
Yeah.
Because I think you're right. I think we are quite advanced in our desire to want to make the relationship work. That's what it is about. And there's a financial reason for doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're still learning. So an interesting
subject.
Oh,
I'm not going to claim, you know, I'm going to write out what we've learned so far. But no, yeah. I mean, absolutely. There's, you know, we still have, you know, projects that go bad and relationships that go bad.
Yeah. And some clients are, I think the real tricky part of this is how much, and you don't know, is how much of an eye for design or an eye for content, that kind of thing, does client A have compared to client B. And you never know.
No.
And some of them are brilliant and others aren't, and both want the same amount of say.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the next step for us.
I also think, to some degree, the other part, the other area we need to improve on, I mean, this is doing next season, isn't it? But we'll wrap up the show in a minute. Hopefully give people a taste.
Yeah.
The other thing I think we need to improve on is that initial meeting with the client, of finding clients that fit us and we fit them. I think sometimes we accept clients where we should have walked away. Not because they were rubbish, but just because we weren't the right fit for them. Mm. I can think of one. And we always know as well. That's the thing. I mean, you said, haven't you? You know, you get this kind of gut reaction. And yet you do. We don't always follow through on that. And I think that's another area we can learn.
Definitely.
And that is part of it. It's part of it is going, well, our personalities are not going to meet. We probably ought not work together.
Yeah.
But in most cases, I think, you know, you can make the relationship work. And I think there's a lot that we can share on that. I think we're pretty good at it, to be honest.
Yes,
I think we've got something to say on that. So let's talk about that next season.
Perfect.
Have you got, right, this better be a pretty impressive joke to end with.
No.
You didn't even know it was the last episode today, did you?
No. I'm having to go back to my list. No, I've had a couple of great jokes recently that people have sent to me, but this is my list of jokes from the Edinburgh Fringe. I quite like this one. This is Tim Key. Drive-through McDonald's was more expensive than I thought, particularly once you've hired the car. That's quite good, isn't it?
That is quite funny. It'll do.
A proper comedian said that.
Proper, yeah.
A real one.
Yeah. I expect they said it a bit better, but...
Of course they did.
Can't be good at everything.
No.
Exactly. You know your giftings. And it's
giftings? Is that a word?
Oh, it's Christian, actually.
Oh,
you don't talk... I apologise profusely. Yeah, you don't have abilities, you have gifts. Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretentious arse. Ignore it.
Fine.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And on that bombshell of me calling Christianity pretentious arse, we shall finish this week's show. Thank you very much for listening. And we will return in April, so don't go away. And also, keep checking the website, because obviously I'm going to be blogging a lot in the meantime, so all good stuff. And the forum too. Shall I finish the show, or shall I just keep it?
Stop.
Oh, and Twitter. Oh, and audio booze as well. I'll keep doing the audio booze, so that's good. Please don't leave me. Please don't leave me alone. The podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. Bye.